From the spy analyst, NATO 3.0 launched in Ankara, Europe divorces, the US, and India is in the crosshairs. The full, unfiltered intelligence briefing on the alliance collapse nobody warned you about, and why it's about to reshape defense markets, mineral supply chains, and global power alignments for decades to come. Before you read another word, understand this. What follows isn't speculation. It isn't a hot take. It is the quiet unraveling of the single most important security relationship of the modern era, and it just happened in a room in Turkey, while most of the world scrolled past it as a diplomatic footnote. This single meeting is already being read by strategists as the trigger point for a complete realignment of global power, not a minor adjustment, but a full reshuffling of alliances, dependencies, and loyalties that the world has taken for granted since 1945. By the end of this piece, you'll understand why that footnote is actually the opening paragraph of a new chapter in world history. You'll understand why it's about to touch defense markets, mineral supply chains, and the foreign policy calculations of nations far beyond Europe. You'll understand why India, sitting 3,000 miles away, is about to feel the shockwaves in its stock markets, its defense procurement pipelines, and its sacred principle of strategic autonomy. Let's go back to the beginning, because this story doesn't start today. It starts in the ashes of the Second World War. When World War II ended, Europe wasn't just tired. It was destroyed. Its factories were rubble. Its currencies were worthless. Its militaries, the same militaries that had once ruled empires spanning the globe, were hollowed out, incapable of defending their own borders, let alone projecting power abroad. Europe was economically shattered and militarily collapsed. The continent that had once ruled the world was now powerless. Into this vacuum stepped the United States, driven by a very specific fear. The fear was simple. If Europe's shattered economies were left vulnerable and desperate, the Soviet Union would exploit that desperation. Communist movements backed by Moscow could sweep into broken European nations one by one, turning capitalist Europe into a communist Europe, not through invasion, but through economic collapse and ideological opportunism. Washington's goal, stated in the plainest possible terms, was to keep Europe firmly inside the capitalist camp, prosperous, stable, and ideologically anchored to the West rather than vulnerable to a communist takeover engineered from Moscow. So America made its move. It launched a colossal reconstruction program, the Marshall Plan, to rebuild Europe's economies and keep them capitalist, out of Soviet reach. But rebuilding factories and currencies wasn't enough. Europe also needed to feel safe enough to focus entirely on economic recovery without constantly looking over its shoulder at Moscow. So alongside the Marshall Plan, America built something even more powerful as its umbrella project, a military alliance, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. And at the very heart of NATO sat one clause that would define the next 80 years of global history, Article 5. Article 5, stripped of all diplomatic language, was a single extraordinary promise from America to Europe. If anyone attacks you, we will treat it as an attack on us. Our entire military might, conventional forces, nuclear weapons, everything, stands behind you. You will never have to face a threat alone. Think about what this actually meant in practice. America was telling sovereign European nations, proud, ancient nations with centuries of independent military history, something almost unthinkable. Translated into the plainest possible terms, here is what Washington was really saying to every capital in Western Europe. You do not need to worry about your own security at all. In fact, go ahead and dismantle your strategic independence completely and hand it over to us. Become our forward anchor, our magnetic pole. We will take full responsibility for your economy and your security both. All you need to do is build policy and focus entirely on economic development. And Europe said yes. This is the moment that matters most, because it explains everything that follows. Europe didn't just receive a security guarantee. Europe outsourced its entire concept of self-reliance to another country. It handed over the keys to its own survival, and in doing so, it also relieved America of ever having to learn how to manage an ally that thought or acted independently. Because no European nation ever asserted its own strategic autonomy, Washington never had to develop the diplomatic instincts for handling a partner with an independent voice. That skill simply atrophied on both sides, together. For the next several decades, this arrangement worked beautifully for everyone involved. European nations poured every ounce of national energy into economic development. They built world-class industries and welfare states, all while never seriously investing in strategic autonomy, the capability to independently defend their own territory and interests without depending on an outside power. This arrangement continued seamlessly through the entire Cold War, deepening year by year, as Europe's own military-industrial capabilities quietly atrophied under the comfort of the American umbrella. Then, in 1990, the Cold War ended. You would expect this moment, the collapse of the Soviet threat that had justified the whole arrangement, to have triggered Europe into reconsidering its total dependency on America. It didn't. With the Soviet Union gone, the United States effectively assumed the mantle of the world's sole superpower. Unchallenged, unrivaled, and European nations, rather than using this moment to build independent strength, leaned further into dependency. Their logic: our security is guaranteed by the most powerful military force in human history. Why would we duplicate what America already provides for free? So instead of building independent capability, Europe redirected its energy toward joining U.S.-led military operations in far-flung regions, sending troops into Afghanistan, into Iraq, into Kuwait, participating in what strategists call out-of-area stabilization operations. Notice what this reveals. Europe wasn't building capability for its own defense. It was contributing manpower to America's global agenda, secure in the knowledge that its own borders remained untouchable. Through the entire Cold War and through the decades that followed it, one thing never changed. Europe never seriously invested in the foundational tools of independent military power, what analysts call strategic enablers: independent satellite and intelligence networks, autonomous logistics, domestic weapons manufacturing at real scale. Why bother? Their security provider had one name, and it wasn't any European capital. It was Washington. Everything was, by every outward appearance, going smoothly. Until it wasn't. Eventually, cracks began appearing in America's global position, and they came from two directions at once, forcing Washington into choices it had never had to make before. The first challenge, Russia. The second, and ultimately more consequential, China. When Russia began reasserting itself militarily and politically near Europe's borders, something revealing happened inside American strategic thinking. Washington's internal read was, in essence, this isn't really a threat to our global supremacy. Russia isn't challenging us as the world's dominant power. It's trying to rebuild influence over territories that used to sit inside the old Soviet sphere, Europe's backyard, not ours. Follow that logic to its natural conclusion, and you get something quietly devastating for Europe. If Russia's ambitions don't actually threaten America's global standing, why should countering them be America's fight to lead? This is the moment the illusion started to crack. For the first time in nearly 80 years,